一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
It's June 27. Welcome back everyone to another episode of Speaker Podcast's Girl Talk. This is your host Gwyn Campbell, and with me I have Mike. Say hi.
Hey there, how's it going?
And I believe we also have Egan.
Right over here.
Renato.
Yay.
And from down under, we have Craig again.
It is so very, very late.
Thank you for...
we're all feeling.
Thank you for joining us again, Craig. Lucky our
schedules, no worries.
We're lucky our schedules overlapped again. Or unlucky, I don't know how this works, really.
Yeah, if you guys could keep delaying till Monday night, that would be fantastic.
But we are here, of course, to talk about episode 13, the halfway mark, the mid-season climax for Macross Delta. We are halfway already. How fast has this flown, guys? I mean, really. I can't believe we're halfway through. You know, 13 episodes from now, we'll be waiting another decade.
It's so strange because from what I hear, this is a really slow-paced show.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't you hear about that? Like some guy was complaining about the pace, and it's a snail's pace or something.
Oh, that's...
Yep.
It's on Twitter. I joined Twitter now only to be greeted by that garbage. So.
Well, Twitter welcomes you, Renato.
I'm sure it does.
Are you sure he's watching the right show? Maybe you should just confirm to make sure he's not watching, like, Flying Witch or something. He's like, there's girls and there's flying, but the mechs are really boring.
But
no,
I'm not watching that, Craig. I'm sorry. Is that currently airing show? Or?
It is. Yeah. Flying Witches.
It's one little slice of life. Enjoy the verdant, you know, pastures of northern Japan. Okay. Nothing Macross Delta.
It is the single most relaxing piece of entertainment I've ever experienced.
Okay. The downside to living in Japan is that no one has time to watch anime. I'm sure, Renato, you know how that goes. But... look, we are here to talk about episode 13 of Delta, or as I call it, Mirage Catches Everyone.
Yes.
The episode, yes. You know, or as I've heard it referred to, the Wings of Farewell Light. I know when I watched it, I felt like I'd just gotten out of the cinema. Guys, did it feel like a really short, just movie to you with the pace of this thing?
Yeah, it felt like, hang on, I've already bought this on Blu-ray 3 times.
I really dug the pace. It was really good. It was a great episode.
Yeah.
Also, it's not quite Wings of Farewell Light because somebody actually died, I'm pretty sure. At least one person actually passed away. So,
A couple of people.
As far as I could tell, it was a couple, but I guess...
Well, I meant main characters. I mean, you know, named people, not just guys in 171s.
The other thing about this episode is I felt it was, and we'll get to this again, but we could. It was fun playing Pick the Homage, you know, finding out which series was being referenced in which scene, but we'll get to that. I think we need to start off by mentioning that Richard in his blog was correct in that we had no opening. And the minute the show opened with no opening, I think we knew that, you know, the shit was going to hit the fan. It opened up...
And no ending, for that matter, as well. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, good call. We opened up immediately where left week last off. The Elysian had folded in just as the king was folding out. Johnson makes a desperate last-attempt shot, and he manages to hit the Sigur Valens in the back as it's folding out. I think he took out or damaged the wind amplifier, the song amplifier system, from memory. And so, anyways, when Windermere defolds at Ragnar, they have to fight conventionally. They don't have Heinz's Song of the Wind to assist them, not at first, at least, which means they've got a regular kind of barrier around the ship. They've got to take on the Ragnar garrison fleet. It's going to take the Elysian 40 minutes to warp back in, and... this opening of the show, I felt, and feel free to jump in here, guys, it really emphasized one theme I liked throughout, which was students and teachers, because you had, you know, Johnson as the previous mentor for the king, You had Mirage, as she later on, you know, her relationship with Hayate as, again, teacher and student. There was a lot of that dynamic flowing through the show, I thought.
Along with Mikamo and Freya, there's a lot of that for that, in that student-mentor relationship, too, yeah.
True.
And Johnson and the King of Windermere, because didn't Johnson teach him?
Yeah, yeah, he did. And that initial shot where they passed each other, I almost felt that was kind of a reference to, if not reference, a kind of throwback to Yamato 2199.
Yes. I thought the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, although 2199 was done better. But but yeah. So, Mike, were you going to say something?
No.
I was going to say Messer and Hayate as well, like Messer being of like the senpai from the grave, almost guiding him because, you know, there was that kind of duality there.
How is there not an anime called Senpai from the Grave? That seems like a perfect anime title.
Quick, someone register that domain, quick.
Someone write it, yes.
Senpai's noticing me from the grave.
Senpai didn't notice me.
I think Messer is a much better senpai from the grave, I think, than he was in person.
Oh, yeah. He's more likable.
You're better, Dad.
Yeah. More likable.
But
at least he listens.
One thing I like about having the Windermere and amplifier busted is, what's his name? The guy with the... Who does the arm sales and all the research for the Windermerians?
Oh, from Epsilon?
Burger?
Yeah.
Oh, Burger?
Yeah, he's standing around with like a pipe, like watching all the engineers do all the work. He's like, yeah, it'll be fixed soon enough. He's just chilling. He didn't seem particularly stressed. That guy's so laid back. He's got to have a story behind him. But
He's a merc. I assume he's just, because his real dog in the fight is, I get paid, right?
Oh, he's also on a ship that's potentially getting shot down.
Yeah, true.
I'm wondering if he's the actual big bad of the entire series yet. We don't know for certain.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be Freud.
Oh, okay. He could be in cahoots with you and Spacey, actually. But I don't know. We'll get to that, I guess. So, just because the Elysian will take 40 minutes to recharge its fold drives doesn't mean we don't have fold boosters. So Alpha, Beta, and Gamma squadrons fold in separately with their fold boosters. Alpha, Beta, and Gamma are supposed to attack the Sigur Valens, while Delta has to take on the Aerial Knights. And this means at least a little bit more 31A action, and that made me very happy.
Well, is it the first time we saw the dogfighting?
Yes.
Yeah, I gotta say, that was exactly what I was going to point out, Ian. They'd mentioned the Alpha and Beta teams before, but then it was just kind of assumed that there was a Gamma team, and they actually showed them. And this is, like, I want to say it's the first time that we've actually seen cannon fodder VF-31s.
They were actually doing work. They were succeeding. They were surviving.
Didn't they show up at the end of the asteroid fight?
We didn't see them dogfighting.
I thought we saw them before. Maybe I'm wrong. I thought we saw them fight a little bit. Maybe I'm thinking of 171s. Anyway, never mind.
I thought they mostly were there to get blown up, but this time I saw at least 131A shoot someone down, although later on they proved pretty useless, as usual. In fact, later on, I'll describe the scene generally, like, they let both, Keith and his little drakens slip right by them, and they were shooting one direction, the bad guys flew past, they're in Batroid, the 31A's in Batroid form, and they basically do a 180 and start shooting after them. It reminded me of a scene from Macross 2. It was with that attack on, I think it was Culture Park. It was something about how that shot was framed. It was really Macross 2-ish to me. But I digress. Look, everyone.
You're right. When they let that happen, that was when Hines had started singing again.
Right.
So my impression that I got was that they were immediately influenced by the wind song, and then the VAR syndrome took over, and that's why they let him through. That was the impression that I got from that.
I thought they were shooting at him, but let me find it again.
Alright, well, while you're doing that, Craig, I'll keep on keeping on here. Everyone's evacuating, the Nyan Nyan's on a boat, and they wave bye-bye to Heathcliff, which is a shame. So we don't know what happened to Heathcliff.
The Nyan Nyan's on a boat. Yes. Oh, it was a joke that I could make about that. But we will digress.
Renato, that is the exact... Yeah, well, that's the exact note I made. Nyan Nyan on a boat. I was like, yo, whoop, see ya. Interestingly...
Are there Glaugs on that boat? We know there's Glaugs in Delta, right? Or Glarge, sorry.
So immediately, also the Aether manages to fold in ahead of the Elysian, of course, because it has its own fold drive. So I thought that was a cool dynamic. Because when you think about it, in theory, either of its arms can fold independently. And
since it didn't use its fold, it didn't have to recharge like a main ship does, yeah.
Exactly, which means you'll never really have a situation where it can't send support in some capacity, which is a cool side effect of the design.
In fact, theoretically, the other arm should be able to do it as well, right? Like
it should have.
I mean, if Elysium can, then I mean, if Aether can, then so can Hara, whatever the other one's called.
But I guess I'd know. Technically, you say there wasn't a point because all the squadrons had launched. Although I guess you could have launched that arm with all the squadrons on it.
Well, true. That's true. Oh no, I'm just saying that theoretically they've got three. Like, they could have sent another ship had it been required. And
right.
They didn't need it this time, but they could have.
Right.
It's a combined.
So the Aether folds in with Valkyrie going full on Ikenai borderline, and this is a group version of Ikenai borderline. Had we heard this before? It wasn't full on Junna. It was everyone singing. No one? Okay.
Wasn't Ikenai borderline yet. That was it was
Valkyrie attack.
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was Valkyrie attack first. Ikenai borderline comes later when Freya goes full on Rune Pika.
Oh, no, she was singing the opening when she went.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Oh, you're right.
Does sing the opening later.
Yeah, I think Ikenai borderline was the first one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You're right. Sorry.
Because they were waiting. I mean, Freya was the one who was saying, okay, well, we've got to do something. And both Mikumo and whatever the redhead girl is called, she told him to calm down, basically. Kaname, yeah. Told him to calm down because we have to wait until the curtain arises. That's part of... Waiting is also part of Valkyra's job.
Right.
So they're kind of like a softball team in that way.
Okay. So while this is happening, of course, Hines' equipment gets fixed. He's singing, which means suddenly things are going to go bad. No, hang on, my bad. I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry. Because the Sigur Valens has jumped in and obviously has left the Elysium behind, basically UN Spacey decides it's time to set us up the bomb. They're going to blow it no matter what, but they want to get Windermere a little bit closer first because... The interesting thing is that the guy from UN Spacey was like, as we thought, you know, they've come for the ruins, so let them get closer. It's like, well, what kind of intelligence? Well, you know, I guess their plan is well known, but they don't necessarily need to make a beeline for the ruins to achieve their objectives. So it kind of seems to me like new UN Spacey might know more than they're letting on about the potential of these ruins.
They
deliberately allowed this to happen.
Right.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I go ball, yeah. I think they... Well, I know, we'll get to that later.
Right. Well, so they wait till the Sigur Valens gets close. They set the bomb off. It goes boom. Chuck's sister is reaction toast.
That's what I was going to say. I think she's gone. She saved the family, but she's done.
I thought the entire thing had blown up. I mean, how does that survive a
I thought it
nuclear
was,
explosion?
I don't think she got hit with the explosion. I think it was the water, because it looked like water blasting over her.
Right.
So I thought it was the wave front from the explosion hitting them.
You would be dead still.
Well, except for the fact that, was it the ruins or the Sigur Valens that was absorbing a lot of the blast? Like, it said a lot of it got absorbed, right? So I got the feeling... it wasn't 100% of the blast that hit everything.
And the ships were already like halfway through evacuating. So go ahead.
You see the boat get hit by the water, but it's basically right at the island.
Right.
And so I don't know. I think the impression is the boat. Plus, there's no point in showing her shoving the kids into the door and shutting it and then getting swept away if they're not going to be all right.
Plus, it's just a fake out, you don't know.
Well, the other thing to remember is she's a mer person. Oh, right.
That's true. I mean,
it's a good point.
They have gills, so I mean they're gonna. She'll be even if she gets swept underwater for 5 minutes, she'll fine.
Be okay. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. You're right.
That's a good point, Mike. You've discovered a third love triangle. Because
I don't know if everything that gets hit with a tsunami can survive because it has gills.
Well, look, I think...
Yeah. I'm not sure about that.
Look, Chuck's sister, Heathcliff, and Messer as a jellyfish. There you go. Done.
They're the only ones still left on the planet. That's right.
It's like Adam and Eve.
They're going to form the secret resistance. They're going to be like the Vichy in France. There
you go. Or
Do you remember love in the Portico Two Rooms? Okay.
I also got to say, since you mentioned the explosion, the shockwave, mm-hmm. that something I really found interesting, and this is I guess you know it's appropriate for the end of the first half of the series, but the VF-31J, the blue one, Hayata's mech, has mm-hmm. pretty much been since Delta was announced. It's pretty much been like the mascot mecha of the series, and. For them, it's gone. They just blew it up. So it's funny, like, because the toy just came out and all this stuff, and they haven't even announced, as far as I know, Gwen, like the skull via the
Messer's one,
Delta Two. Yeah, Messer's plane, Delta Two, the Grim Reaper. Like, that's not even announced. I don't even know, is Mirage's plane out there? Like,
well,
it's a mock-up we see in displays, but they haven't a toy release date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they haven't released any of the toys yet.
Right.
They're just in the markets. Hayato's DX is up first, and that's in December. And I think they said that Messer's was second, but there's no date for it.
So how weird is it that they've blown up the plane before releasing the actual toy? It's
Bandai's terrible at the way they release toys, but that's a whole other podcast.
Well, I mean,
got to do the power up. I mean, this is Bandai and Gundam doing the whole power up to the next main character's mecha. So,
That's what Takatoku did with the original toys. While the show was airing, the main mecha was for a while the VF-1J. But as soon as Roy died, they released the VF-1S with Hikaru's name on it. That's why there's no actual Takatoku toy. With Roy's name on the cockpit. It's all got Hikaru on it. They released it, like, pretty much... I can't remember exactly, but I think it's, like, the week or at least the month that they showed that episode. So they timed it.
Hmm.
You see, and that to me, that would have shown a little bit more foresight if they do that, but I don't think they're going to do that. So I just... It's funny, because, you know, the VF-1J was, like, the mascot mecha, like you said, for almost... And it still kind of is the original mecha. So... Just funny to me that
it's only like in like 8 episodes or so, really, of the original because it doesn't appear for the whole first 5 or even 6 episodes.
Yeah, at least
Anyway, can I just say that this sequence gave me a lot of flashbacks to Kakizaki. I thought Chuck was a goner.
Exactly. I thought Chuck was a goner.
Like,
the angles are the same too. If you go back and watch the Birth Point episode.
And you know what? He may be because... Oh, no, you see his plane. Yeah, I was going to say...
Yeah, you see him.
The last time you see his face is escaping that explosion. And also, you know what I was thinking about?
At the very end of the episode.
Yeah, that's what I said. You see him land, But I was watching this and I was thinking about it. We know shit all about how Arad flies. We've seen every single other one of them in some sort of combat except Arad.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of flown past and shot something really briefly. But for the guy who's in charge of Delta Squad, he just seems unimportant in a way.
Yeah.
I like that he's basically the Kaname of the team. the one who...
Kaname's had way more to do than...
That we're going to get his story later on.
Well, Sorry, go ahead, Ian. Huh?
We know that there is some background story of Arad, just like Kaname, we know she has a background story. We're going to probably hear more about Arad's story now, especially since Messer is no longer around.
He he's had character moments, but like no flying moments. Like Kaname had got to do Axia. She's had her sort of her professional moment. We haven't seen his Axia moment yet.
Well, there was a comment like back in the first quarter of the series where Chuck says that, you know, Mesa might possibly be even better than Arad. And it's like, well, if Arad's at Mesa level, well, he's got to be pretty darn good, and he's held in that regard. We haven't seen it, but he's referred to in that category.
Well, if Mesa
a lot about the rest of the team, because if Mesa is like one-third of the fighting capability of the entire team, then one-third of that or more of that is Arad. Everyone else, there is a tiny slice of pie left.
What a crappy team.
That's exactly
that team sucks.
Well, now that we have Super Saiyan Hayate here at the end, I'm sure we'll get to that.
Glowing hair and all, right?
I bet that's not even his final form.
Well, actually, when you see
modes already.
When you see Hayate's Val getting trashed by the blast, I was getting a very Macross Zero vibe as well. I was expecting him to start glowing gold and fly off into the sunset, kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, good call.
I was halfway hoping that Kawamura was going to pull a Tomino. Okay. Oh, you thought he was the main character? You thought here's no. Now we take care of no. Take him out and bring in a new main character.
Who would be Machina?
Freya flies a plane with Song.
And that's why we have a new opening. Machina is going to be the star now.
Yeah, yeah. If Machina was the star, she could repair the plane as she took damage, so she'd never get shot down.
Exactly. Exactly. And all would be right with the world.
So you get that the feeling. I kind of get the feeling that. So they blow the bomb, and there's this other ruin that kind of was in a different space, which gets revealed, right? Or a device or a structure. And
yeah, they said it was in fault space in the sense.
That's right, yeah. And no one seems to be overly surprised by this. Which is like, well, was this the King's plan all along? Like, did they leave Ragnar to last because they knew that this would be basically their capital? This is where they need to set up. This is where this major thing is waiting. Was Ragnar their end goal all along, and you and Spacey kind of play into that because they set up the bomb and then revealed this new structure? Or maybe you and Spacey knew something and this was all being set up and they wanted to happen. I don't know. We never see what happened to the new and Spacey guy.
Well, no, you and Spacey, as the thing is appearing from Fold Space, the you and Spacey guy was saying, oh, yes, this is what the academics were talking about, what the scientists were going on about.
Right.
So they knew that it was a theory. I guess they probably didn't know that it was going to happen for sure.
He didn't seem too fazed.
But it wasn't. Yeah, well, no, okay. He wasn't surprised. He'd heard about it before.
We're coming to the only. Okay, this is the only note I wrote, and it's a question. Right after the bomb explodes, we see the King looking down. He says they would use motherlands that taint. Well, they would use weapons that taint their motherland without hesitation. At least that's the translation. Which, assuming it's vaguely accurate, means that he is like, oh, they set off a bomb, and seem surprised about that. If the Windermerians, one of the theories that was going around was that the Windermerians had set off the bomb on their own planet as like a motivational thing or for whatever reason. If he had set off the bomb, he wouldn't be saying, oh, you set off a bomb in your homeland? How shocking. So that means the Windermerians didn't do it. I genuinely don't think that the Chaos guys did it. Like, I feel like Arad would own up to that if he was ever going to do it. I reckon Nuns did it to both and has somehow been managing to make it each look like the other did it. So I think Nuns has been in on this from the start. Like, whatever this group setting it off. That's why they're not shocked, because they've been setting this up. They set off the one on Mindamir, which had some effect. I mean, we know it's still kind of churning, and now they've set off this one. I think they're going to be the ultimate villains in all this.
No, we know they did it, though. Do we not? I thought that was obvious. Well, I thought it was obvious that the UN Spacey were the ones that blew up the bomb. What I was talking about
the
was...
The Windermerians said that UN Spacey did it, but Arad said that it was the Windermerians who did it. He says that
regards to the one on Windermere, perhaps, but the one here that just exploded was the new in Spacey, because they literally said,
absolutely,
you better get out, hurry up and get out, because we're going to blow everything up.
Oh, no, right? No, no, I agree. I absolutely know this one was, Okay. No, this one. I'm saying that I think the Windermerian one was also nuns, and that they somehow, they said to their troops, oh, the Windermerians set it off. And then the Windermerians were like, well, nuns set it off. Like, they made it look like, each made it look like this.
Yeah,
that's
the other one. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so nuns is kind of playing both sides.
Yeah, Mikimo did say something to the effect of she implied that you're talking about the explosion that happened back on Windermere.
Their big crater.
That Mikimo was saying it was all a perspective, kind of indicating that even the nuns' explanation might not be the correct one or the right one. So
yeah, I think whoever the slimy guy who set this bomb off, I know he had a main, the major guy. I think whatever faction he is working for is playing some larger game, and he's playing all the sides against each other in some way.
Although there was the whole conversation between the Cat Planet Prime Minister and Royd, right? Where it was pretty much...
He said, I know the Windermerian, I know you guys set it off yourselves.
Right.
But why then would the king of the planet, who's just talking to himself, be like, setting off a bomb on your own planet? That's madness.
Well then that brings up another theory, and I think that maybe the king didn't know, and maybe Royd was the one that was behind that. Not trying to usurp his power, but more so because remember he had that conversation outside the Sigur Valens with Keith, and he said, you know, hey, we were supposed to do this together. We were supposed to, you know, usher in this new era together. And so I think that there's something going on there as well. And that's probably, the king probably had no clue, you know?
So, I mean, for all we know, Royd, the major guy, and whatever group, maybe they're a part of the same group. What if Royd is part of this big group that's playing both sides against the other? I mean, we know that you and Nuns had a presence on Windermere, so...
Right, well, at the end, you know, while he's on the bridge with the king, and I don't think, you know, it's slightly jumping ahead, but, the king dies, and Royd has that new pair of leader glasses already in his top pocket to swap out.
That's what I was going to say. Now you know it's serious because he's changed glasses.
Yeah, he was ready for it,
Can I go with another thing? I think maybe he killed the king. And he's like in the explosion happened. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a flashback, or like at some point in the future where we see that he at that moment took his chance and killed the king.
Well, we saw the king kind of partially decaying in front of him as he was even giving orders. So he was, maybe. I mean, he was fairly much dead standing to begin with.
But this kind of if he does it in a way that makes it seem like, you know, oh, the nuns devils did it to our king, they killed him, we, you know, like, it adds motivation. You know, he says, the king appointed me to be in charge. We never see the king say that.
I thought he said he's just taking charge. I don't believe he said he was...
Well, the subtitle said something, hang on, I'll find it again. But the subtitle said something
about... Yeah, he did say something like, as stated in the king's will...
Oh, was that what he said?
Okay. I am next in charge, yeah.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for cleaning up for me. So, this...
I don't remember people's names, but I remember that.
These ruins, right, they've appeared... this new structure that has appeared where the ruins were. The protoculture ship can dock with it, and it changes to look very much like something that's jumped out of Macross Zero.
Like Mirage said, it was transforming. It's a transformer.
They also
got a transformer.
Why didn't they say that about everything?
When it's getting revealed, they say, "Ah, yes, you know, from the Grand King of Mayan or something like that." So, it's a specific call out to Macross Zero, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I caught that Mayan reference too.
Yeah,
I think it would be quite timely to mention something that Andrew Colley, Veef, over at the Veef Show Collection DX brought up earlier this week in a reference I know I'd completely overlooked, in that the Ragnans themselves are kind of referred to in Macross Zero when they talk about the bird human and how, was it Roy Kanu, and the fish, how the fish lost their tails and grew legs and therefore could walk on land.
Oh,
nice.
I didn't even think of that.
And heads up to, you know, all kudos to Andrew for bringing that up, because I think everyone's mind got kind of blown. Like, oh, yeah, it's almost like from zero, from the time the Valkyries went CG, we almost have this whole new, everything kind of connects and leads back to zero, with references to Firebomber here and there.
What is the legend? Roy Kano did what?
Like, they talk about how he lost his tail, or his tail cut off and grew legs.
He fell in love with someone.
It was a legend that talked about, you know, how the protoculture formed different humanoid races.
Yeah, but that doesn't... Okay, look. Okay, Veef. I like Veef, you know. But that could mean anything. I mean, that could mean humans on Earth.
It could. It's supposed to.
Right. Yeah, but it could just as well mean Ragnans, because they still have their.
It's guilt. Still a fun story.
Of course
story.
It does. Okay, all right.
That's the nice thing about retconning, is you can make anything fit, right? So,
hey, I've found that shot. According to the subs, it says, "In accordance with His Majesty's last will, I will assume command." See, I took that to mean, I guess, last will. I guess could mean last will and testament. I took it as like according to the last thing he said to me. But I see what you're saying.
Yeah, he said actually the word Uigon, which means the actual will document.
Oh, okay,
which means that it's not just his interpretation. They would have to go back and check it, unless he faked it, which it could still be a thing.
Yeah. Okay, right. Cool.
Yeah, and then when they dock with the protoculture ruins. According to the subs, the king says, in accordance with His Grand Majesty Rudanjal Ram Mayan. So
that's it.
I'm like, that's a straight up wow. Yeah, I was like, whoa, they just pulled out zero.
Well, they really want people to go back and watch that show, don't they?
Yeah.
Those Blu-rays are out there, but
They're still there. Warm in those shelves.
So at this point, Heinz gets to sing again. VAR happens, as it tends to. And Johnson makes the call to retreat, to leave the planet. He's going to have Valkyria suppress the VAR as much as possible, particularly focusing on the civilians who'd gotten to the island ship, the island-class ship, so they can evacuate as many as they can and make a retreat off the planet. Basically, up the planet.
Which does take off. I remember last week we were like, once an island lands, can it take off again? Turns out, yes it can.
Yeah, we have no idea how, and I think this is the first time we've seen them take off, Craig. But yeah, I thought the exact same thing. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, why are they evacuating to an island ship when it can't take... Oh, and then it spends half the episode just floating there in atmosphere.
Excuse me. Macro 7 did it.
Okay,
Macro 7, you see Macro 7 lifting up from planet Rax.
Oh, you do too. Oh
my god.
I stand corrected.
Why doesn't everyone remember this show?
Because it's 57,000 episodes long and 90% of it is Basra singing the same song.
Again, why doesn't anyone watch Macro 7?
I stand corrected, Renato. It has been 3 years since I've watched the show. I'll have to correct that once Delta finishes.
Yeah, you're right. I thought it was pretty cool to see it. All things considered, I liked seeing that in reverse in a way, because we've seen them land several times now.
Right. I think also the image, the idea that they can't take off was probably, for me at least, it came from Macross Frontier, because all the island ships Island 1 just lands so violently in that show.
In Frontier, by the time they land, they say that, like, because of all the damage they've taken from the Vajra, their ecosystem is so f***ed up they can't sustain themselves in space, and they had to land. That was why they were like, that was how they justified the attack on the Vajra homeworld. They're like, we've got no choice, we're going to die otherwise.
Right.
Well, so that's a pretty interesting call by Johnson, I thought, and they were getting everyone off world, or everyone they could. Not that many, obviously. And this is the point at which, of course, Hayate switches, gets his mid-season upgrade to Mrs. Valk. And Bogue, of course, comes in to do his thing. They decide they're going to take Valkyrie out for good this time. and he looks
He literally does his thing again because it's the reuse.
Oh my gosh!
Stock footage.
The same shot.
But yeah,
does anyone else? I have this image of, like, that's how he sits up in bed every morning, like,
it's time to kill that Curie again!
Someone
please Photoshop that. Just Photoshop an alarm clock in the back of his cockpit.
Or just him in different circumstances, like him on a toilet. you could do him in a car, road raging, I don't know.
Speaking of the Aerial Knights, to take a brief...
Winning at Mario Kart.
A brief step back. I'm pretty sure I saw a couple of Drakens get wasted in that blast.
Yeah. I thought that was going to be the twins, but when they didn't make a big deal of it, I guess it was just generic someone.
It was a couple of the drones that get attached. So I don't know if it were Bogue's drones or whatever.
I actually stopped and rewatched it, and there was a Draken where you could clearly see the drones attached to its wings still.
Oh yeah, there was that too, but it wasn't like all Drakens is what I was saying.
Right. Oh, there's some 31s in there as well, some 31As, and there was this 171 at least one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think they were trying to show that nuke was just killing people indiscriminately. Like they didn't care that it was gonna blow up some of the Nuns forces or some of the Windermerian forces. It's just like, we're sitting off this nuke and we're getting out of here.
Hmm. Well, I don't remember seeing much in the way of, you know, cannon fodder Drakens, so I'm curious as to whether someone actually did die and the fallout's going to come next.
I feel like they would have said something. Like, if none of the... And don't you see... You see Herman and the greenhead guy afterwards.
Yeah, but you don't see the twins. I'll say that much.
Yeah, true, but I mean, I feel like if they were actually going to kill him, they would have... Well, I mean, maybe not, but I feel like they said something, right?
Well, I'm curious as to whether...
They would have had a reaction.
The thing is, we've seen what I think are two sets of twins in the show so far.
Oh, really?
Because there's also the young twins who are the attendants of Hines, who almost look like rejects from Escaflowne. But I was like, two sets of twins within, like, the same royal, like, castle, that seems a bit weird. But who knows? I mean, the twins seem so underdeveloped, I was thinking maybe they could be genetically engineered, but I'm probably thinking too much into it. So Bogue does his thing. It busts the barrier that's covering Valkyrie. Then the king, the Sigur Valens, goes to fire its main weapon. And it has a main weapon. I remember we were saying last week, does it need a main weapon? Because you add the Song of the Wind to this ship, and it doesn't really need to shoot anything. Well, apparently it does. It fires, and Johnson has been watching Battlestar Galactica. He does a Galactica drop right into the atmosphere with a pinpoint barrier, moving faster than the speed of
really,
light.
Really, really powerful pinpoint barrier.
Well, hey, look, if a wave motion cannon... Sorry, what I'm saying, wrong show. If a Macross cannon can be blocked by a bunch of Vajra larvae with their wings outspread.
I suppose that's true. I didn't really think about that.
Yeah. Well, exactly. What he's been watching is not Battlestar Galactica. It's Sayonara and the Tsubasa.
Well, they did that in the end of the main series, too. Vajra blocked the... Yeah.
But it was a very fast drop into atmosphere. He blocks it. It looks like...
Yeah.
That was pretty rad.
It was really cool. It was a great scene. It was,
It was really well done. Because then he... Is that when he landed and then fired back? Later.
It looked like he went down. Like, he submerged completely after he took that hit.
It was a fake out.
Then they come up transforming.
Right.
Later on.
Yeah. Oh, but wait, we didn't talk about Valkyrie, because you said that the... Bogue had shot the barrier and it had smashed, but we didn't know what happened to them for a while because it cuts away to like Hayate and stuff. But then when it cuts back, and just before Herman fires the big gun, we see that Mikomo had protected Freya and actually got some injury on her shoulder.
Mm-hmm. And had a minor scratch.
Yeah, and it was she was like, "Oh, this is nothing," and I'm looking at it going, "Yeah, it is. It's like cross hatching,
right?"
because she's like Archie, not human. You know? She can't be hurt.
She is actually. She's wearing a purple wig, and she's actually Maytel Renato. Okay, this is. She's finally gotten a machine body from.
Anyway. I still think she's a protoculture.
Oh, that looked like an artificial scratch, but either way, she took some damage finally. But you're right, and Renato again. Why does she cover? Again, I'm always confused why she covers Freya because she
knows that Freya's the.
Well, that's the thing. I thought she might see some worth or Freya's hidden talent, but she seems so surprised at what happens next, is that Freya's rune completely goes crazy, and she jumps off the edge.
You perv.
she jumps off the edge of the ship.
In the best scene of the entire episode.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Was it just me, or was it vaguely Ghibli-ish? It felt like a flying
girl, basically.
Yeah. Of course, before that happened, I'm missing so much here. We missed the whole scene where, after Hayate got shot down, of course, he ejected, got caught by Mirage. That was Mirage's first catch of the show. And then they have a moment where he hugs her afterwards, which I still don't think it's really a love triangle. But
yeah, neither.
But it was make Freya react.
Yeah, this is the funny thing about this so-called love triangle. It's that none of the characters actually think that it is, but they suspect that the other one, that some other character is thinking that it is. And so it's Suspicious Minds by Elvis Presley.
It's a love trap. It's a love arrow. They both love him, and he likes, planes or something. I don't know.
that's true. And it's always, they have these moments, like first they have the moment where, Hayate hugs her, and and then, she's, Mirage is taken aback by it, but then, she's kind of like, I kind of like this, and then Freya gets all like, well, what's going on over there? And then, when he goes to the window and they start having their cutesy little discussion, he calls it, I thought the way that they translate it was funny. He's like, hey, your passionate horns glowing red. And she gets all embarrassed. Then they cut to Mirage, and then Mirage is all like jealous. I was like, dude, she just got all hugged up on. And then now she's jealous that Hayate's over there talking to Freya. So it's kind of funny that they don't want to admit that they like him. Hayate's clueless, obviously. But like, the other one, they don't want to admit that they like him, but they don't like it when they show that he likes somebody else.
Right.
Typical women.
But I think the girls don't even admit to themselves that they like him. I think they don't really realize it until they see him with someone else, at which point they have pangs of jealousy. But they probably haven't figured out why.
Right.
That's the way I see it anyway.
If we're talking about that, we got to talk for a second about him jumping into Messer's plane. Okay. If we're talking about this whole bit. This is such a nitpick, but I have to because it was the first thing I thought of. Early on, they made a big deal about Ray and Mikimo saying, listen, we've modded your fighter so you don't have to wear a helmet, okay? And then he just jumps into Messer's one without his helmet on. Does that mean he can't use half the shit because it hasn't been modified to him to use without a helmet?
That's why they should never have even had that scene to begin with. It was fine. People didn't need to wear helmets to ride Valkyries ever before in Macross, so why even bother wasting animation time explaining something that nobody cares about?
Because it was cute.
See, now they've dug themselves into a... No, it wasn't! Machina and the other one.
How dare you, Renato? You silenced your insolent mouth.
I will turn off my mic. By which I mean you.
do you guys think that they're gonna like in season two he'll be flying Mess's plane, but like the black will be blue, like it'll be blue, but you'll still have this,
new variant.
The logo.
I think the logo.
And all the viewers will go, I have to buy another one now.
I don't think the logo is very high out there. It's got to change. The logo at the very least will change.
Nah, he'll keep it. He'll keep it for because it's like the skull logo. Like it's. That's the reference they're doing. Although I guess they didn't finish the color scheme then, so maybe they won't. I don't know.
I agree with you, Craig. Like, yeah, that's like that's basically the homage to the Skull Squadron or the Skull Fighter or whatever.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say. So something I had pointed out last cast. So even though that the planes have not been repainted yet, they started referring to themselves. I had to think for a minute because their numbers all got redesignated since Messer's not there anymore. So Hayat is now Delta 4 instead of Delta 5. Chuck is 3. Mirage is 2.
That's right.
So I was like, oh, okay. So I'm hoping that if they do repaint the plane, that it'll be Messer's plane, but it'll have a 4 instead of a 2 on the side. So we'll see if they pay attention to detail.
That would be pretty cool.
I was half expecting that they were going to do the Gundam-like mid-season upgrade from the beginning because have there ever been a case that the main character in a Macross series was flying just the A variant throughout the entire series?
Yes. You mean like the version he starts off with?
Oh, the A, no, specifically the A version. Like we've had J's and F's. Zero, we had A, but he goes into a D for a while. So we
starts in a D and then goes to an A.
Yeah. So we've never had someone who was in an A, you know, the kind of fodder equivalent. One laser was not the A specifically, but like the one laser ahead and stay on there for the entire series.
No, for the same reason that we haven't had a one main character just be a destroyed pilot and tell a gritty war story about how life in the barracks or whatever.
So now we finally have Hayate in a two laser head unit, kind of like what we usually expect from the main character of a Macross series.
Hmm. Yeah, because what's his name? He flew his F. Alto flew his F the entire series.
Yeah. Until they switch over to 29, yeah.
True. No, wait, he was in the 171 for a while.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, for like one episode, that's true.
It's just one? I bought that one.
Yeah, no, fair point.
That's the one I bought.
And it was a 171. Well, I guess it was a special, so. Yeah.
Well, anyway. As we mentioned, you know, Freya has to get her song to Hayate to help him because he's getting shot at by Keith. And so she does the logical thing and jumps off into midair from the floating, what ship are we on here? The Aether. And
I'll say again, best scene ever.
Like, and what's interesting, there's multiple levels to this because I keep thinking she's going to hit the ground because of the perspective of people seeing her falling, but people are watching her fall from the island class ship, which is already in atmosphere. And the Aether is above that, so she actually falls past the entire island ship of people and keeps falling.
That's right. She's not flying. She's falling with style.
Exactly.
That's right. Toy Story.
She's got her boosters on too, which she uses a couple of times.
So it's not even free fall. She's going faster because she uses the boosters as she's falling.
Right. Yep. Yeah, she has complete control over herself now. She's not like all wacky like the past.
Oh, she kind of tumbles as she jumps out.
She does, but then she starts controlling herself midair, which, you know, if you remember her first time, she couldn't do that. And then even when they landed back in Flash of Axia, she couldn't stick the landing. So it's funny. Like, I guess her Rune Pika upgrade gives her like control over her boosters now.
Just like also, Nick was saying. Like back when they were training, and then it was when she saw Hayate was in some kind of danger that she jumps, she becomes her full potential. That when the stakes are, you know, everything's at stake, that's when she goes into, you know, her final form, shall we say.
Well, I love the fact that she's falling and she's singing, and what does the song do? It's the instant Kawamori Kukan button. Because suddenly everyone gets their dose of Kawamori space. I'm not just talking Hayate, I'm talking Keith, I'm talking Hines. Everyone gets hit with their blue sky. I'm just...
Hines is hilarious.
Why were they not naked this time? What's going on? Why are they all not naked?
Hines just go...
They just remembered they were at 10:30 p.m. at the dive time. It's like, oh, maybe we shouldn't put that in.
They put them naked in the first episode, Egan. Come on.
I know, I'm joking.
But yeah, I mean, you get the feeling Hines is getting this direct mental feedback from her because he feels like he's falling as she is falling, much like they made that connection when she first encountered the ruins.
That's the last time you see Hines in the episode too, so we don't really know what happened to him after that. Although he stopped singing. So.
Yeah, we see him at the end because he feels the king die. And
Oh, that's true. He's sitting on the ground and he feels the king die. You're right. I'd forgotten that. Yep.
So
not everyone dies if you don't see them yet. Craig's just killing everyone.
But to Renata,
No, I didn't think he was dead. I just thought it was interesting that he wasn't around.
Oh, okay.
No, nobody dies. This is Macross.
So Renato, you said you liked this scene. What in particular got you?
Number one, the animation completely shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is not only detailed, but you have specific frames rather than just layers moving, if you know what I mean. So, for example, when she's falling, her whole face is moving and contorting and stuff. It's not just her lips moving. The way that it was choreographed, like the way the camera shifts from, first of all, focusing down on her hand and then her hand turning into like a fist. And her hand is on the ground, right? So she uses that same hand to lift herself up, and then the camera just follows her, and we basically jump off the ship along with her. And then when so now we're at the angle above her from behind as she's falling, and she's transformed at the high note of the song, right. As in her clothes have changed from the previous like weirdo costume to the regular luxury costume.
I'll have you know I like those costumes, and the minute I saw Mikomo wearing it, I was like, I'm looking forward to the next comic kit. Because there's going to be some good cosplays. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking they were doing a really good Sharon Ranka cosplay over there. They were putting on the full Sharon Ranka moment during the concert.
Well, of course,
this episode.
There was also and it feels weird to say this, but the homage to Wings of Farewell, where you had
exactly.
Mikomo and Freya doing the whole shot back-to-back with the wings appearing behind them. And I gotta admit, that felt kind of out of place, because they don't have that relationship that Ranka and Cheryl had. So it was just like, Mikomo, you're not part of this triangle. Why are you in this homage kind of thing?
I didn't mind it, though. I liked it, though.
It was a neat throwback, and given how big Cheryl and Ranka were, it's obviously...
It's probably deliberate.
Yeah, deliberate, I thought.
I think we need a few more scenes between the two of them, too. I think that's one of the relationships that feels like they keep telling us it's important, but we don't see enough of it to...
A lot, because there's that, like she said, her thing is mystery. We have yet to find out what's truly behind her backstory for Mikomo. So when we get that, we might get the relationship really gelling, hopefully.
So Freya goes bungee jumping. and
without a rope.
You get this scene of it's her just song. her song reaches Hayate in this form. It's very much like you see that astral projection kind of Ranka. Kind of, she's kind of supporting Hayate from behind. Which I thought was really nice. It was a
I think that's after Mirage. I think that's after Mirage catches her.
Yeah, I will say, thanks for bringing that up, Craig. I will say I do like what this show has done as far as kind of bending its own tropes, where, we go all the way back to the first Macross, where you've got Hikaru catching Minmay, and so you always expect the man to catch the woman. And they almost do that, where Hayate almost saves her, but then Keith shoots his hand off. And so then Mirage says, no, I'll come in. I'll take care of this. You go kick his ass. And so I thought that was kind of cool, because like both times Mirage has kind of been the hero. Like you said at the beginning, Gwen, like Mirage catches everybody, right? So like I just thought that was really interesting how they kind of – played on their own tropes that they've set forth, and they're like, nope, it's not going to be that, it's going to be this. And they're, even though there's like this kind of rivalry between them because they both like Hayate, Mirage is still going to do her job, and they're still friends. So she's like, yeah, of course, why wouldn't I save Freya? Obviously, I doubt she's got any kind of malicious intentions in her mind to just let her fall and crash to her death, but I still think that was really, it's really neat that they kind of they gender bent that a little bit and just let Mirage play
I agree. With the explosion at early on, where you're wondering, is Chuck going to make it? What's going to happen? It's the best way to use tropes. Yes, play homage to it, but use it to defy and play with the expectations of the audience. So they may think what's going to happen next, but then completely reverse what they think is going
to
happen.
So it's the anti-Gundam is what you're telling me, Egan, where all the tropes have to happen in the way they happen, otherwise it's not Gundam, apparently. Although
but Calmar gets the chance to just say, yeah, it's going to happen, but not the way you think it's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. And, Mirage catches her, and I'm like, wow, Mirage has caught two people at this point. Why didn't she just catch the falling Macross Elysium after it got hit by that energy blast?
I was going to make that joke earlier, and I was like, no, that's stupid. But
hey, remember, she caught Hayate when he went up in that VF-131 in the first episode, right?
She did, Mike.
That's true.
She catches everybody. That's her power.
She's the catcher.
Well, that could go wrong.
The catcher in the giddy giddy eye.
We went literary there.
Literary reference there, by the way.
So
not just one.
She puts Frey in the back of her Valk. Frey is singing, powers up Hayate, who's taking on Keith. At this point, Johnson has a big surprise. He pops up out of the water
I'm so glad I wasn't the only one who laughed.
Johnson pops up as he's want to do mid-transformation.
I'm glad Sarah's not on this podcast.
He fires the Macross cannon from the Elysian, and am I the only one who was a little bit disappointed in the fact that it wasn't the old school Macross guns on the back of the ship? It was the fact that the second carrier actually had a gun hidden in it.
I'm hoping both carriers have a gun hidden in it and it can dual wield.
That'd be very John Woo.
John Woo, that's what I was going to say. And I think they kind of, that's another defying trope thing, that instead of having the guns on the back of the ship, they actually blew those up. So they're like,
exactly.
No,
they had that moment.
I don't agree 100%, Mike. Sorry. I don't agree 100% with that because, well, first of all, even in Frontier, the main ships were all using like guns, right?
Right.
And then,
I don't think we've seen shoulder guns since.
We haven't seen shoulder guns in ages. That's why I was looking forward to seeing them. Although, granted, we did get a throwback to Do You Remember Love in that we saw the Sigurd Valens shot disintegrate those guns, or whatever those things are. What are they? That's what I want to know.
They're on the back, too. They come up from the rear of the Elysian.
Oh, when
I think
it transforms, yeah.
Yeah, they're on the back of the Elysium in its ship mode. You can see right at the end when you see it. Mm. You can see their damage sticking out the rear edge near the engines.
Right.
I assume they're just gun turrets.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, they were they're the actual Macross cannon, and the thing that Johnson fired was like having a little pistol in your sock. It's the secret hand cannon he had in that scene.
They're on the quarter as well, right? And they've got guns on the quarters.
They are on the quarter.
When he said that there was a gun in his sock, I kept thinking of, imagine Elysian did a RoboCop or a Pat Labor thing and pull it out from
its
holster.
Of its engine.
jumped the shark, but that would have been cool.
So I was a little disappointed by that, but hey, it was a great scene. He fires at the Sigurd Valens. And what I loved about that scene was you got that immediately post-firing the cannon shot of all the water kind of glowing gold and coming down off the Elysian, kind of an underside shot. It was just a really, really nice shot.
That whole sequence of it coming up was really cool.
So it's a shame that Adrian isn't here, actually, because I wanted to hear his insight on this. On Twitter, some of the animators that were working on that particular shot came up and said that they took a look at the storyboards and they said, okay, the way to do this is we're just going to do straight up kaiju style. And we're going to shoot it like it was a kaiju movie.
That's cool.
I'm not as familiar with kaiju movies as Adrian is, so... I was wondering, I did actually get some kind of like vibe, like all these like giant things that are moving very, very slowly. But there's wanton destruction and lots of tiny details, such as the water all the water droplets like falling off from the and the low angles as well.
Hold on 1 second, Renato. Gwen, did you hear that? So Renato was completely averse to getting on Twitter, and now he's actually used it to find some great, interesting info and bring it to all of us. So
I'm sure these are the same animators that were complaining about how slow the show was, Mike, right?
No, what I mean is, like, you follow those guys, and then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the other stupid guys, so it balances himself out.
Well, there's a black button for that, Renato. You can follow who you want. You can tune out the white noise.
I follow who I want in real life too.
Don't tell him that. That's, right. That's part of Twitter. The white noise is part of Twitter. That's how you know you're alive.
But so Johnson shoots his load.
Really?
Well, you do it on purpose. It's not funny.
I know. Yeah. thank you for that, Renato. So anyways, the fleet, well, such as it is, because it's like, what, an island-class ship, four other ships, and the Elysian that I could count, they fold out on an emergency fold. Before that, of course, what am I saying? Hayate shoots down Keith, but I don't think he's dead.
No, he's not.
They then
he's
land not. On the Elysian, they fold out.
No chance. Yeah.
Right.
I thought the only thing I thought was a bummer about that is it's almost exactly the same as the Bogue sequence from I remember the episode, the one where they're on the cat planet.
There's one big difference, and that is that when Hayate was on full on power up mode, and he made reference. He said, "Hey, he's riding my wind. What's going on?" And then when Hayate shot to kill, there was the initial laser blast that got deflected, but then they have that arm on the back that has like that laser cannon, that got shot off. But then he comes out with his hand cannon, and he shot directly at the cockpit. They made a specific showed that like the cockpit got blasted, so Hayate was no longer shooting at, like, trying to wing him. He was trying to kill him.
I suppose that's why they did it in almost the same way, to show that, like, last time he targets the cockpit and then retargets the leg and fires.
Exactly.
So I guess this time maybe they used the same shot as an echo of that, which I didn't think of before, but kind of worked. That's an interesting, like, counterbeat.
Which can mean one or two things, that either, what's the name of the...
Keith?
What's his name? Yeah, Keith. So either he's such a good pilot that Hayate can't really read so far ahead his moves as he could with Bogue, and so he had to shoot to kill, or that he would be willing to let Bogue go because he's just a little idiot, but he would never forgive Keith for killing Messer.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the whole point. And the other cool part that they did, if you pause it, because you could think, whoa, did Keith just get shot down? Did he buy the dust? As he's getting shot, you see the cockpit like fill up with smoke. Right at the end, you see his their version of the X gear. His helmet comes on, and he flies. No. Yeah,
you're close, but it's the hologram switching off. Because remember, they're always wearing the helmets.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But I thought if you go watch it, it looks like it's coming on, not off.
No, it's the hologram shutting down. Like his head goes forward, and you see his helmet like flicker into existence, and that's because the cockpit's been blown out, and and is like the hologram's shot essentially. So you're seeing the reality of what's going on rather than the virtual cockpit without the helmet.
Okay. But either way, I took it to mean like it was like his emergency system kicking in or something. But either way, he's still alive. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, totally. I'm wondering if he's going to come back. Like if he'll have a scar or some sort of like physical change. But yeah, he's 100% alive.
Another way to homage Escaflowne in Delandu. Okay.
I was getting I get a lot of Esker vibes overall from Delta, really.
Especially the Aerial Knights. I mean, they are basically named after what was going to be Esker. on his original title.
Of course. Well, I mean, everything in the design of Windermere, I basically get an Esker vibe, but that's, yeah. I'm just a huge Esker.
I really need to watch that again.
Maybe Thomas Romain is a very big fan.
So the Elysian folds out, the king is dead, Roy takes control, and that's about where we're at.
They say that they're going to be back. They'll be back to save their world.
Right. And look, I'm
By the way, I called it last week.
Oh?
Last week, I said this part's going to end with the Knights of the Windermere taking control and the Chaos Fleet being like a... like fighting against the, like, no longer being in charge. They're now the aggressors. They're the ones who have to take everything back.
Yeah, you said it was going to become Gundam. Yeah, I remember that.
That's right. I don't think I used that word.
No, okay. I did, sure. Look, and I think so much, this episode was, you know, overall such an assault of entertainment. I think the sheer overwhelmingness of it is really being reflected in how we're all overlapping with each other in trying to talk more than normal this episode. But before I open it up to you guys, just I will say the one other minor disappointment I had, other than the Elysian's main guns not being its main guns, was that this episode was a terrific climax. It was a great way to finish the first half of the season, but again, it has not answered any of the mysteries that it itself has set up. None of the questions I really want to know about, Lady M being the biggest, of course, have really been answered yet. And that was a bit of a shame. I was hoping for a bit of that.
If anything, it's raised some more questions that we still have. You know, now we have to find out as well.
Right. But, I mean, Craig, as someone who called the Gundamization of the series, I mean, how did you find the episode overall? Because I know you texted me earlier today, and you're like, we got to talk about this.
I think this may be one of my favorite episodes of a Macross series, like any of them. I loved it from start to finish. I thought the pacing was great. I thought the animation was great. I thought the character beats were great. I thought the combat was awesome. I even liked the music, the way that it was employed, like the way they sang the opening and stuff. Like, I just dug it from start to finish. I had zero significant complaints. Like I said, I had the nitpick about Hayato flying without a helmet, but that's a nitpick. No, I dug it from go to woe, and I think if I was ever to rank like my top 10 Macross episodes, this would be in there somewhere.
Renato, was it as high up there in your personal... I mean, I know you episodes like 1 to 10 for you are normally all Macross Frontier episodes, right?
Stop. Please just stop. As you were told on Twitter earlier today. I'm watching you, man. I'm following.
It's so, another Twitter reference.
Yeah, there you go. So, I would say so. I think this was much better than all of Frontier put together, certainly. I think this was a cheaper way of just enjoying the second movie, which is the only thing about Frontier that I like. And also, I think it's up the, like a couple of podcasts ago, we were talking about how, you know, Macross basically goes, you know, I was arguing about whether or not these consecutive shows go further than the previous one. But then Adrian said, well, I think the word you're looking for is to go off the rails, really. Oh, like, right. Yeah. And this did that while still keeping true to some of the tropes that Macross is all about, which Egan, of course, already talked about, such as they're keeping the tropes in there, but they're putting their own twist on them. And I really, really enjoyed everything, especially in the second half. First half, like, I really didn't understand what the point of shooting, like, at the very, very beginning, when they shoot back, and then they're like, oh, well, I guess we have to wait now.
Oh, I think the main thing there is showing that it's why they can, you know, prolong the battle, and why, even though they first got the upper hand against the UN Spacey and Chaos, why the Windermere were still at tactically that was necessary for the battle, but no, you're talking about narratively the reason for it or something.
No, I understood that while the episode played out, but just when it happened, I was like, well, what's the point of that? And then they arrive, and then they can't use the Vara syndrome because they can't use the song yet. So I was like, this is... So for the first, like, 5-6 minutes, I was like, this is more anticlimactic than I thought. So I thought it was just going to be straight up battle from the beginning. You know, because the previous episode ended on a cliffhanger when they're like, okay, here they are. And it's just like, oh, okay. But then everything after that is perfect. And the bit where Freya just jumps right off the ship, okay, that's almost literally jumping the shark, if there were any sharks left in Ragnar at that point.
Although
she fell for a really long time.
She did.
No, but that's established in Macross canon. Remember in the second Frontier movie, Alto gets shot, and then there's like 10 minutes of conversation with other people, and then he wakes up to the singing.
Yeah, and Macross Zero as well.
Well, and Plus as well is someone going headfirst towards the ground.
Falling in Macross takes a really long time.
Apparently, on the way to the very first Macross series in the first couple episodes, of Minmay falling. Yeah.
Well, first episode of Macross when Hikaru's falling, and then he's having a conversation with Misa about how to transform the VF1D.
Yeah.
So that's true, but I mean. You know, none of that was a nitpick for me. I thought it was just like part of Macross. It was fine.
Yeah, it's just goofy. It's fine.
It's all the tropes combined as well. So you've got the gas jet clusters and the skirts being useful.
Well, and the whole thing about risking, you know, putting your life on the line is something, you know, that's been stressed by characters since episode one. So I thought it was nice to see that whole kind of dialogue come to fruition. I think. I don't know if this is what you kind of mean, Renato, but I thought it went off the rails, as Adrian was explaining. It went off the rails in that it went a direction we didn't necessarily expect it to. But it didn't jump the shark in doing so, in my opinion. And that was
I don't think it jumped the shark.
I thought that was an amazing balancing act, really.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
There was two things I thought about, you know, what we are now calling the moment of this episode, you know, her jumping out. That had that moment happened, say, earlier in the series, like when you remember in the first episode, people were still not even buying the idea of Valkyrie. If something like that happened early in the series, would the audience be able to buy it? But by working it into the series, developing it, and yet still defying our expectations at the last moment, it worked for that, you know, particular that moment that it needed to happen in the story. It worked.
Yeah.
Another thing I was thinking of that moment, you remember when the opening first debuted for us, the opening song, a lot of us had reservations. It's not our favorite song yet. It doesn't work for us yet. But it's partly because it didn't have a moment in the series narratively where it was used. It was introduced to us without being part of the context of the story. Now that we've seen the song being used in the story as part of that moment, do you really enjoy the song more now?
Yes, I do, actually. And I'll tell you something, Quinn. We were talking about the meaning of the song's lyrics and that stuff. And I said, this is Freya's song. Even though I think she's not the main vocalist in the opening.
Mm.
I think you said that, right?
No.
I can't
she's
tell.
She's not. It's Juna.
She's not.
Yeah, but this is her, totally. Like, the whole...
What is
now? All of the lyrics are about... I know, and it's been established in the narrative now that it is, but like from the first time that I heard the song, like the song is about not living until
you only have one chance at love, go for it all, that kind of thing.
Yeah, not living.
That's very much. Yeah.
So you're saying that when you're in love, you should throw yourself off a tall structure, is what you're saying.
And Egan, to go love along with that, it's like now finally this song has become part of. You know, it finally feels like part of Macross, and it will no longer be the opening anymore.
Sarah and I were talking about it. It's like we've given this song a grand send-off in order to make way for the new song that's going to come in the second half.
That's a good
call. This is the only song that she could have sung in this particular moment, because she's literally putting her life on the line, and this is if you could only have one love once. What is it? Is it like an alcohol?
If I love only once.
Yeah, if I am to love only once.
Right.
Then whatever.
You're right, and it was a nice touch that it was actually, because you're right, like in the OP, it's Juna singing it, but it was nice to have Freya like sing it as she's, you know, leaping off into the oblivion.
You know what? I just had the opening playing. There's a scene, you know, in the opening, there's a shot of her like on Windermere running forwards, and then it changes into her, and then she leaps. That's the same shot, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's same shot. That's another thing. Like, it's
I didn't notice that.
You didn't notice that.
No, I the first thing I didn't notice. I didn't notice that it was the same. Basically,
it's the same movement.
That's of course. Now we get this alternate version of the song, which, as far as I know, is not included on the Valkyrie album that comes out next month.
Yeah, they're just giving us more reasons not to buy stuff.
Definitely said is part one. Right, so we're gonna see more.
I did like the way Freya was singing it, and Renato, when she did that first opening line, how it timed the end of the line right with where she jumped off the edge of the ship. Yeah. So she wasn't so much singing the last bit of that line as yelling it. Like, I remember thinking, well, is this going to be the alternate version? Because it just sounds like she totally just yelled a line out. That was not singing at the very end there.
Which worked for the moment. That was perfect.
Oh, it worked for the moment entirely. I was just wondering how it will work on an album. But hey, it's no different, I guess, to that. What is it? The battle version of Totsugeki
Love? I was just going to say that.
That was on one of the Firebomber albums. And
where Gamblin interrupts and says, Nekimasuna, you now realize that your singing has absolutely no effect on the anime.
It's like, why is this in my song? Like, give me the normal version of the song. But it'll be interesting to
because
see.
Because that's what Akitol wanted. Honey Suzuki did not believe.
That's true. He didn't, that's true. All right, so Egan, I think, was that the bulk of your wrap-up thoughts? Because if so, I'll throw to Mike. But
I think so, yeah, that pretty much
okay,
it.
Okay, so Mike, any final thoughts?
You kind of covered it earlier, but I just want to give a shout-out to Richard, the Goobaba blog, because it's a great blog for anybody that's listening that if you want to go back and rewatch any, he hasn't started with Delta yet. He's just given his thoughts. But if you want to go back and watch any of the previous Macross series, he's got some really, really good insights into just the background of each episode and what's been going on. And it's just a really, really good companion piece if you want to watch any of the older Macross series. And as it relates to that, as it relates to this episode, he had just blogged about the final episode of Macross Frontier, The Sound of You. And he said, the episode skips the opening. And he says it reminds him of like Yamato and the old Yamato and the Yamato 2 series. There's no OP. And you knew you're in for a really intense, fully packed episode. And like, as that blog just came out, and then Delta goes and does the exact same thing, and so it just set the pace perfectly. So kudos to Richard for that. I completely agree, because again, Gwen, like you mentioned at the beginning, it really did feel like a little mini cinematic movie. And after I watched the Raw this morning, or when it aired yesterday morning for me, once the sub came out, I actually watched episode 12 and 13 back to back, and it does, if you watch those two, it runs like a movie, like a longer movie. So it's really feels more like a two-parter. It should have been a special 1 hour episode or something like that, but I don't know if those are common there in Japan. But I do feel like they were two parts of a greater whole.
Yeah, you know? Well, because of the schedule, they can't really work that out. I mean, production schedule.
Yeah.
Bad enough, you know, that people are dying just to produce 1 half-hour a week. So.
Right. Yeah, as I learned in Shirobako, how stuff works. But
yes. At an expo, Shirobako, come over. I've written some stuff that's going to be on display.
Excellent.
Go to the PA Works booth. Well, Adrian will be there too.
I'll be working the PA Works booth, actually.
Oh, okay. So you, Adrian, will be there, and my stuff will be there.
Yes.
Also, my sister will be there. But
Lip. Okay, Lip's going to do it. Excellent. Well,
you're working at the PA booth?
Yeah.
We hope to have a Gwen-free speaker podcast where we reveal all the secrets of Gwyn's childhood.
Hey, so, oh my God. That'll be a very short podcast.
But anyway, that's pretty much it for me for Delta. I pretty much made all my other feelings known throughout the cast, but this was just by far a great episode. And I do hope, I don't think they're going to take a week off or anything. We're just going to get right into the second half.
I'm really surprised by that. This feels like such a like mid-season cliffhanger that would, on most anime, you'd then get a break for a couple of or a month or two or a season. Like, right. I'm shocked that they're going straight into the next. I'm glad, don't get me wrong, but I'm really surprised. Really surprised.
Yeah, I do feel like it should stop and just, at least for like a week, to take a week off.
And take a breath.
Yeah, but I, as far as I know, Gwyn is just going to air at its normal time next week.
Right, well, that's what it seems to be. But speaking of which, Egan, do you have a title for us for next episode?
Yes. Kyoryu Embracing, which could translate to drifting, drift embracing. Big thing about that is that it may be a callback out to Love Drifts Away, the title for the climactic battle in the first Macross series. So we'll see what that comes out to.
Interesting.
Could be a reference to Orgus as well, because that's the title of the opening.
That's right.
Where are you going? When are you coming home?
It could be all unique, and they're not referencing something every 15 seconds, but why no?
Gwyn, you'd actually translated it as passionate embrace, but is that would you say that's correct?
Oh, that's for the last episode. Passionate was for the
Oh, passionate diving. Episode. Sorry. Lost embrace is what you had called.
I believe so. And Mike, again, I think I mentioned this last week. I did those on the fly the instant they got leaked, so I'll have to go back. I even know where I haven't even saved those. But yeah, no, that's probably the way I interpreted it. But we'll just see how those how it ends up getting subbed. But anyways, guys, look, thank you very much for your time. I think we're all really excited about what's coming. Just to wrap things up there, Egan, I know people can't find you. Well, you'll be at Anime Expo, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
As well as a few other folks there now.
Okay, and yeah, Mike, I believe we can find you at Anime Expo as well.
Yeah, you find me at Anime Expo. I'll be at the PA Works booth. If anybody's listening, feel free to stop on by. Adrian will be there with me as well, and apparently some of Renato's pieces. You can also find me on Twitter, at Mike in Redlands. This week I've been tweeting about Person of Interest, which is another fantastic TV show. If you have not had a chance to watch it, that just ended. It's great. And the Game of Thrones final episode, which just aired last night, which was freaking amazing. Of course, Delta. And still trying to get some fans who are stuck in the past to at least give it a try. And you could see Gwyn's and mine's futile attempts all on Twitter. Just follow me at Mike in Redlands. Thank you.
Renato, you're at AX as well.
I'm at AX as well. I will be giving a talk there, which is about science fiction and robots and little girls, magical girls and idols, and how it all connects together and how people shouldn't care whether something is science fiction or not. They should just enjoy it. Kawamori's words when he was like 19 years old, not mine. Okay. Direct quote from one of the slides that I have prepared for you.
Interesting.
As Mike mentioned, some of my writing will also hopefully be appearing in the PA Works booth. I might pop in there from time to time as well. I'm not really sure what's going on with that.
Okay.
And Renato, where can we find you on Twitter?
That's exactly what I was about to ask, Mike.
Well, here we go. I am at Renatology on Twitter. That's Renatology.
And that's funny. Do you need an e-meter to join Renatology? Or
you know something? I thought I was being smart because I thought it was like biology, like, you know, the study of something, sociology. And then goddamn Scientology is a thing. Why is it a thing? I mean, I knew about it, of course, but it wasn't the first thing
I was going to say. You know, it wasn't like a thing like yesterday, right? Like, it's been around.
No, I knew about it, of course. But Scientology, like, it's supposed to be a religion, but it doesn't sound like a religion. If you put ology at the end of it, it means the study of something. So putting ology at the end of any word should mean the study of something, but now it just means like a play on Scientology. And I'm also involved with a non-profit organization called Astrosociology. It makes it worse. So nothing I say. What do I talk about on Twitter? Well, usually I'm tweeting either ridiculous pictures of robots that I drew or links to articles which I wrote years ago, which I don't know if people are finding interesting or boring. It's too early to tell yet. If you do find it interesting, I'll tweet more. If you don't, I'll tweet something else. What else? Oh, yeah, Carbonetti stuff. I tweet quite a bit of Carbonetti production art.
I saw some of the first Blu-ray being played at a local shop today, Renato, and good Lord, those Blu-rays look gorgeous for Carbonelli.
The Blu-rays look gorgeous. Also, they come chock full of interesting stuff. You know, you like the old the ending
art,
Mikimoto art, right? It's all there as like postcard size versions. Wow.
Damn.
And then also it comes with a CD, which I didn't know about. I thought it was another DVD worth of stuff, but it was just a CD, so I was disappointed. And I played it, and oh my God, it's amazing!
Interesting.
You have to listen to this CD. Like it's not the soundtrack. It's like an alternate takes track collection. I'm not really sure what it is actually, but it sounds incredible.
All right. Well,
a million times better than the music in Delta. I'll tell you that. I love Delta, but.
Wow.
It's much, much better in terms
of... All right, well, before we boot Renato off this podcast, Craig, tell us all about your podcast and where people can find you.
I was going to say, I'm going to be watching anime, and I may expo it. I don't know, I got nothing. I'm not going to anime expo.
Neither am I.
I am recording the next episode of Reanimated this coming weekend, which will be our look back at the season we just aired, so that'll be coming out soon. Repacked is airing each and every week. We record that tomorrow night, our next, which will be 132, I believe. And you can find me, I'm at The Screen Man on Twitter. I'll probably go back to doing dishes on Delta once you guys stop recording on Monday nights. So, you know,
gotcha.
I have to do work again, but that'll suck. But, you know, it's all good. Other than that, I think it's all I got.
All right. Well,
1 o'clock. It's 1:20 in the morning. I've got to be up in 5 hours. So.
Well, thank you for your time as always. And if anyone's looking to contact the podcast, you can email us at speakerpod@gmail.com. You can find me, as Mike mentioned, on Twitter at Gwyn Campbell, capital G, capital C. And look, it is very late there, Craig, in your neck of the woods, and I think we should all probably get out of here. So I'm really looking forward to next week's episode, as I think everyone is. So to everyone listening, please tune in again next week for a lot more Macrossology here on the Gear Talk.
I see what you did there.
Nice. And we're folding out.